So now for virya, or vigor. The fourth paramita, the fourth perfection, the fourth transcendental virtue. And this, of course, represents the masculine aspect of the spiritual life. The word virya itself presents us with no difficulties. Virya means masculine potency, driving force, energy, and vigor. And it comes from the same Indo-Aryan root as our own English word virtue, which originally meant strength, and also virility. And this is the general meaning, vigor or energy. Now, in specifically Buddhist terms, in the specifically Buddhist sense, virya, energy or vigor, is energy in pursuit of the good. This is how it's defined by Shantideva. And good here means enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. And it's important to notice here that virya, vigor, energy, doesn't mean just ordinary activity. If you're rushing here and there all day doing this and doing that, being very busy, doing lots of things, getting through a lot of work, you're not necessarily practicing virya, paramita. You're not necessarily practicing vigor or energy as one of the Buddhist virtues. That's quite a different thing. In fact, in this connection, it's very interesting to refer to Gampopa's definition of laziness. Gampopa was a great Kagyupa teacher, a Tibetan, at about the time of our Norman conquest in this country. And in his Dual Ornament of Liberation, Gampopa defines laziness as being constantly busy and constantly active in subduing enemies and accumulating money. He says this is laziness. In other words, subduing enemies, you can take that as representing politics, and accumulating money, you can take that as representing business. So Gampopa is saying that to engage full-time, very energetically, in either politics or business or both, is simply laziness, however apparently busy you may be. This isn't virya, this isn't energy or vigor in the Buddhistic sense. Now this paramita, virya, energy, vigor, is extremely important because in a sense all the other paramitas depend upon it. If you want to give, you've got to have a certain amount of energy. If you want to practice the precepts, again, energy is necessary. Want to meditate, again you need energy. Even if you want to practice patience and forbearance, you need a certain amount of at least negative energy in the form of resistance. And if you want to develop wisdom, well of course you need more energy than ever then. So this particular paramita is very, very important in as much as the practice of all the other paramitas, in a sense, depends upon it. And this brings us right up against a very big problem. And the problem is this. We have, let us say, a spiritual ideal. An ideal of a state or an experience or a goal that we want to reach and realize. Let us say that our spiritual ideal is the Bodhisattva ideal itself. And we have of this ideal a quite clear intellectual understanding. We know all about it. We've read about it. We've heard about it. We've understood in our own minds. We could perhaps give a connected account of it if anybody asked us. So we genuinely accept it. But what happens? What usually happens? Despite our clear intellectual understanding of the ideal, despite our quite genuine acceptance of it, we don't somehow manage to attain it. In fact, the months and the seasons and the years, perhaps even the decades, go by. We've still got this ideal, we're still hanging on to this ideal, but only too often we do not appear to have made any perceptible progress. We feel as though we're just where we were. I remember a very, in a way, moving example of this many years ago in India, when I went along to hear a talk by Jay Krishnamurti. And it was a very, very good talk, and at the end of the talk, there were, of course, questions and answers and discussions. And in the midst of the discussion, one woman got up and she said to Krishnamurti, with her voice sort of vibrating with emotion, and this often happens in Krishnamurti's meetings, by the way, when people get up and ask questions. She said, "Sir, we've been following you and accepting this ideal and trying to put it into practice for 40 years. But she said, we're just where we were 40 years ago. What shall we do about it? So I forget what he said. But this is the sort of thing which does happen. He wasn't speechless. No, he had quite a lot to say. But this is the sort of thing that happens. And I wouldn't like to think that any of us, say, in 40 years' time, we look back and we have to admit that, well, 40 years later, 40 years from this day, we're just where we were all those years earlier. So the question arises, well, why is this? We've got the ideal. We're quite clear about it. We know what we have to do. But nothing seems to happen. We even make an effort, a sort of feeble, intermittent effort, every now and then, once a week, an hour or two. We make an effort, but nothing seems to happen. There's no perceptible progress. It's just as though you stood at the foot of Mount Kanchenjunga and you look up at the snow peak and it's there. And maybe 20 years later, you're still at the same spot. You think you've made a few steps forward, but as far as you can see, it's just as distant as ever it was.